Hello, guys, and welcome to the latest edition of the Black Spin Global podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah, guys, we've got a special guest joining us. It's Anastasia Folorontsho from the Ground Pass podcast. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I think it's safe to say we're both doing better than Lucy. Fresh from Paris.
You know what?
Fresh
the listeners are going to be like, when is Lucy 100%? When is she standing still? Like, what is her problem?
So look, I don't know. It seems like Lucy's living life. Maybe she's doing better than us. So.
Exactly. It's a great way to look at it. How are you, Lucy? I think it's only right we start with you. Like, obviously, you were in Paris for the women's final. Like,
yes. So, well, to be fair, the trip itself was not even, I did not plan how long I was this year whatsoever. I just had family members that was in Paris. I regularly go to Paris. So I've got family and friends there. So I literally booked my ticket like 2 weeks ago. I didn't even realize it was the same time. It's when I got to Paris, I was like, oh shoot, I could actually watch maybe
finals
something.
Weekend. Crazy.
Yeah. So I literally got the women's final ticket at 9 p.m. the day before. Like, it was beyond last minute. You cannot even explain it.
Do you want to share how much you paid? Do you want to share how much you paid? Like, just to show
all that matters is that I am alive and I'm, you know, my rent is paid and I am here. No one should ask anything about anything. I paid and I closed my eyes. That responsibility is off. So I just have this bad habit of once I pay my rent, I'm like, you know what? I don't care.
I'm free.
As long as I can sleep somewhere, I'm good. That's all that matters. But no, it was cool. Worth the money anyways, worth the experience. I've been to one women's final, Wimbledon last year, but I was there the last couple games for the Ons one.
Because with
Wimbledon, is only the main journalists that get the spots first, like the big one, important ones and stuff. So like
bigger publications. Yeah.
So whatever seat was available, we went, hence why we couldn't even enter when it was Alcaraz and Djokovic. So this was my first proper women's final. So it was still worth it. And yeah, I'm glad, you know, I saw family, I saw the women's final. I did not sleep, I partied, but I am here to give you a podcast. If I forget something, if I'm not 100%, thank God we have two hosts today. If not, Eugene would have just, yeah.
Sure.
Thank you for joining us, Anastasia, a lot. Thank you a lot.
Thank you for having me. And I double down on the fact that Lucy's living life and we should catch up.
No, I agree. Let's get into the women's final. I think it's the only really place we should really start. So Jasmine Paolini, our Italian Ghanaian sister. Well, now I say Polish now.
No, don't add Polish. No.
People in Poland, all of a sudden, they didn't add Polish.
You did not hear Polish until she started winning. See? You see, they're trying to snatch her away. No more Poland. Start again.
Yeah.
No.
Paolini, she was the 12th seed as well. Like, now she's going to be a top 10 player, which is incredible. I think world number seven is going to be a career high for her. But in that final against Iga Swiatek, I mean, she started really well. Like, she actually was the first to break.
Yeah, she's first to break. The first couple of games, she was so, it was like, I was like, oh shoot, we're going to have like something crazy. Like, she was so locked in. It was just insane.
Good. Like, but before the match, maybe Anastasia, you can start. Like, what were your kind of expectations going in?
You know what? I definitely didn't think it was going to be a blowout. I've watched Paolini live before, and there is something about her, the sort of focus and energy she brings on court and the self-belief. Like, you can almost feel it. Like, she knows she has it. So I thought this is going to be a competitive match. And you're right. Those first three games, I was like, oh, let me just, you know, let me clear the schedule. I'm going to sit down. This is going to be it. It's going to be great. So I really was expecting something from her. I didn't really expect she was going to win, but I was hoping for three sets.
Lucy?
Yeah, no, I feel the same. I generally thought like it was going to be, I thought it was going to be a very tough battle for Iga. I thought it was going to be like another, probably her second hardest match as well. But I felt like once the match actually started, Iga was so aggressive. Like, I was like, hold on, you do not play like this. Like, now, she plays well, of course. Granted, the numbers are there, but she was so much more aggressive. And you can tell that she went back to be like, okay, her and her team went back to see how Paolini played, because Paolini is a very, very strong player, very aggressive player. But yeah, I just like Yonis Asia, I generally thought it would be like a three sets thing. I wasn't too sure if she wasn't going to win, because Iga has been in a crazy run. You know, she's won it, this is the fourth time, and Clay's her favorite thing and stuff. But I think maybe it was just the nerves, because even on the second set, you could tell like it just, that self-belief that you were talking about, it wasn't there anymore. And then for like one quick little moment, and then when the crowd was cheering her up, literally, I remember she was like, Iga was about to break, and she literally just went all the way up. She was just serving, and he came back again, which is understandable. But I'm not mad at it, man. For her to make it to the singles finals, doubles finals, she had a very great run. I like how now more and more people are going to be aware of her and also interested in her. Even when I was there in person, I could tell some people was the first time really watching her, and they were kind of like taken back at like her returns and stuff. Even though she couldn't do a lot of return winners against Iga, it was really difficult. You could tell people were so impressed. So I'm just happy about that. I'm happy that, you know, she's going to get like more eyes and more support, because, you know, she's so talented. And what little fun fact about the Italians, literally there was Sinner, Paolini, and I think even the doubles men finals as well, they were Italian. Yeah. Like they're killing it right now. So yeah, shout out to the Italians.
Although Sinner, he lost in the semis.
He did. But I'm just saying, like, in terms of like them making
the latter stages. Definitely. Italian tennis is right now, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That was really dope.
But just on Paolini, so she was the 12th seed. Before this year, she had never made it past the second round in Paris. Like, and obviously, like, we've been hot on her for a minute in terms of, like, kind of tracking her game and, like, kind of seeing that she has ability. Like, and we did call it, but at the start of this year, we said, listen, she's gonna make runs, like, at the slams. It's only a matter of time. And, like, there was just something about, I think it was the United Cup that she played at the start of the year.
Yeah,
it was the match against Kerber. I was like, she looks like a different player. Like, just in terms of, like you said, we've always been aware of the ability, but the belief now, and she's spoken of that, like the self-belief she has, that has really like kind of taken her up a few levels. And I just feel like, for now, like, I say the sky is the limit. She's now number 7 in the world. Like, who would have thought Jasmine Paolini at 28 years old is going to be the world number 7? Like, it's mad.
I definitely wouldn't have. I have to say, you know, you guys shining a light on her, that's how I discovered her. Remember, I can't remember what tournament it was, but you probably will, where she played Quinn Wen. In a final.
Yeah, that was in Italy.
In Italy.
Yeah, last year.
I think Palermo,
Palermo, I think that's what it was too. And you were all tweeting about it. And I'm like, who is this? Like, who should I be paying attention to? Who should I be watching? And I remember watching that final and leaving. Leila Fernandez is another one of my favorite players. And, you know, Paolini just had that energy, that just kind of like gumption. And I love expressive players. She's a very expressive player. So I've been following her throughout this whole time. And, you know, so I don't know if you know the Andy Roddick podcast, the Serve podcast.
Yeah, very good.
It's a really great podcast. Actually, I love it. It's nice hearing from a former player kind of like that. But I remember when he was doing his analysis, he was kind of like, who's Paolini, blah, 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 and moved on. And I went on Twitter and I was like, yo, excuse me, she's a 12th seed, I think. And I get it, a lot of people do not know her, but it's not like she was at this tournament at number 30 or 40. She was the 12th seed. Of course, it's not crazy that she's in the final. And I'm happy that more people are going to get to know her and just experience her style of tennis, because, you know, to be 5'4 and freaking hitting, you know, Elena Rybakina off the court. Come on, you got to watch that. Like that's elite.
That's a great, great shout, Anastasia. Like just on that, what were, for both of you, what was her most standout match in terms of like during this run? Lucy, you go first.
What was her standout match?
Sorry, I'm going back right now.
If you want me to start, I can start.
Go on.
I have to say her standout match for me was the one with Elena Rybakina, because just on paper, there's no way she's winning that match. Physically, she's 5'4". Elena Rybakina is 6 foot tall. Elena Rybakina is a massive server. Mm. And because of her height, she has this sort of almost physical advantage over Paolini. And I think there are a lot of players who would have maybe come into that match seeing that, maybe intimidated by that, but she just stood her ground. I remember watching that match and thinking, if I had just a little bit of that confidence, my life would be so much better. it was just so great. Like, she wasn't afraid to hit back at Elena Rybakina. And I think that might have also thrown Rybakina off a little bit, like not expecting that. I do think they have played before. I think they have played before, but again, and you know, so maybe
he lost.
Yeah. And maybe she didn't come into that expecting to have her be that aggressive, but that was the standout match for me. That was when I thought, that's when I actually thought, you know, based off of that match, I looked at the final and I thought, you know what? Iga might have a tough situation.
I'll have to agree with you, because when I saw that they were going to play against each other, I actually was like, I don't know if she's actually going to be able to do that. But it was a tough one. Rybakina did not, there was sometimes she didn't play her best, but even that, Paolini didn't, like, you know, she took advantage of whatever move, everything that she could. So it was a good match, 100%.
I hear both of you, but I'm going to go, it's going to be weird, I'm going to go third round, Andreescu. Like, for me, that was like a, because she won the first set 6-1, and it was like a 28 minute first set, and I was like, Paolini's moving crazy out here, like, against Bianca, a Grand Slam champion. I know Andreescu as well, she's coming back from injury. But she's a dangerous player. Players do not want to be seeing Bianca Andreescu early rounds of Grand Slam. And then it turned into...
And she had she'd had two really good matches before.
Exactly. And it turned into a free set win for Paolini in the end. But I was like, for her to get through that, I was like, we could be onto something here. And then the draw kind of opened up for her, like, I think after that too, like in terms of, in the fourth round, she had Avanesyan, who's actually, we share the same birthday. She's a Russian, which is cool. Again, Paolini won that in three sets. And then the quarterfinal against Rybakina, again, a three set win. And then a straight sets win against Mira Andreeva, the teenager. And again, that was quite impressive.
Good match as well. The one with Andreeva, that Mira girl,
Special.
Give her a little moment, she's going to be a problem. Because to be very honest, that match would have been even more intense simply if she kept it down with her unforced errors. Her errors were just too much. But she has fantastic defense. She was moving so well. She was very confident as well, especially for such a young girl. I'm really looking forward to like seeing her in the future. Favorite players, of course.
Definitely well said. Paolini, just a dream fortnight. Obviously, she also finished runner-up in the doubles with Sara Arni. Shouts out to Coco Gauff. Obviously, we'll talk more about her. But yeah, Coco Gauff and Katerina Siniakova, they won the doubles title. Just Paolini overall, this tournament, like, just incredible, amazing. Man. Like,
I think for me, what I really love as well is how she keeps on saying, like, I'm so proud of myself, and she keeps on smiling and you know, like she's taking it the moment.
Yeah.
Because she could be like, F this, I lost it. And I lost also in doubles and stuff, but she's taking it all in. And, you know, after all these times of like working really hard, hence why there's some people, and that's why I said that, made that tweet yesterday, is like, or when she was about to make the finals, it's like, you know, this might be surprising to a lot of people, to some of you, because you guys were not aware of who she was. This girl has been grinding, like she's been really working hard and been dealing with the toughest draws, hence why some of you may not know about her. But when she was winning those matches, she was playing her best tennis. And when she was losing the matches, she was also giving it all. She's really, really, really like, and I remember, Alicia, I remember saying, I went back to some of our clips, I remember saying last year that she was one of the hardest working WTA players last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And it showed it, because she came in through this season like, right, I worked hard last year, now let's get some wins in. She won a title, a big one as well. Got to a Grand Slam final and she lost to bloody Iga, like, you know, someone who's like number one player in her best surface. So, you know, it is what it is. But next time we'll get her. Shout out to Pally. And I can't, I'm just happy for her. And then I can't wait for her to, you know, and remember I said beginning of this season, she will be at the WTA finals. Just watch.
Yeah. Well, but did you hear her right now?
Yeah, she's close.
She's close.
Did you hear her say that in press, actually? She was asked in press, like, what would you like to do? And she was like, I'd like to play Iga again. Whew. Like, I love that. Mm. I love that. I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, yeah. Definitely.
We're going to get our leg back.
Let's move on to Coco Gauff now. So she made a run to the semifinals, falling to the eventual champ, Iga Świątek. Oh, that match for me, like, I was expecting more. Like, it was a bit underwhelming, I'll say.
Yeah, like, 100%.
Just going in, like, because I picked Coco to win the tournament, Anastasia, before.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I just had a feeling that, like, yeah, it was kind of her time, just because it was obviously like heart as well as head, but more heart, definitely. But yeah, Coco played pretty well, I thought, like in Paris this fortnight. Like, can't remember every single match off the top of my head, but yeah, it was like a steady kind of run, like, through. But yeah, that Iga match, obviously the matchup is horrible. Like, it's what, I want to say it was 11-1 coming in.
It's 11-1 now.
Oh, 11-1 now, so it's 10-1 coming in. Like, so of course it's a horrible matchup on clay as well, as we've established as Iga's, like, best surface. What do you guys make of Coco's run? And obviously, like we said, congratulations to her now being a first-time doubles Grand Slam champion, which is amazing. But yeah, Coco's 2024 singles Roland Garros campaign, what are we saying?
I think she did like a wonderful, like, she was playing really well. Some of her matches were like quick. You know, she played, I feel like during her entire clay season, Roland Garros was definitely her best. And which I find really impressive, because I'm not going to lie, going to Roland Garros, I was very worried, because although she was making it far in other tournaments, you know, there was, with Grand Slams is different, but it just shows to you how much she wanted it. I think, and Tamani also, shout out to him. I saw him yesterday and we spoke about it, because we were like, who do you think would have, because I was like, man, if Osaka beat Iga that match, who do you think would have actually won it? Like, he was like, easily Coco. And when I sat down for football, I'm like, oh my gosh, this was literally meant, like, this could have been like hers and stuff, you know?
As in the slam overall, the French Open.
Yeah. She was like, you know, the best player there. She was playing really well. She was focused. You know, she's got to a final before. So she's definitely going to get one day eventually. When it came to the Iga match, I think I was surprised to see that she was a little bit nervous. And I think the issue with the umpire, because her first set, I was watching it while I was in a meeting, which was not great. So for a hot moment, I couldn't figure out what was going on with the umpire and stuff. And I think that was also a lot. Like, she it looked like she looked overwhelmed.
But she actually broke after that incident with the umpire. She broke.
Which again, and I've always said the one thing I love the most about Coco is that she's such a fighter, because that she could use that moment to just mess up the entire thing and could have even been bageled, who knows? But the fact that she used that to feel herself, and it goes back to what I've been saying for so long, like she has matured so much, hence why I didn't really like the pressure on her a couple years ago, because this girl was, she's not even 21 yet, like she's still pretty young, so you can tell that she's maturing, she's getting stronger mentally. But I really, really thought it was going to be like a fight, like I even woke up, I was like, I can feel it. But you know, it is what it is. It's a sport, it's a mental thing. She probably felt pressure. Like, I don't know. I would really love to know like how she felt going in. Or maybe if it was just, I don't know. I'm just curious, you know, because I think I just did not really like expect, especially for the way she was playing before, but totally understandable. But either way, she made it to the semifinals. And again, she won. We left with something.
100%. Yeah. 100%. We left with something. And a new ranking.
And a new rank. New ranking, doubles title. She is 20 and she has a single Grand Slam with her, and also a doubles one as well.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Just saying. So, yeah.
It's really a great achievement on her part. And I have to agree with you, Lucy. Like coming into Roland Garros, I was like, I don't know. The form wasn't looking great, but she crushed her first few matches. I was like, oh, my bad.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, let me just rejigger my mind here to see, because she was playing so, so well. And when it came to the Iga match, I was actually like, okay, she's playing so well. They had just played in Rome and it was three sets. And I was like, oh,
exactly.
Can we get that match again?
Exactly.
So I was I was kind of like, oh no, where's that? What happened? Where's that Coco? And you know, Coco's great. Coco's number two in the world, deservedly. But she has an ego problem. She has an ego problem. And I'm just sort of, you know, interested to see how, I'm very fascinated to see how players are kind of, how they improve each other. I like that dynamic where it's like, oh, you have a problem with this player. How do you improve your game to then beat this player? So I'm waiting for that moment, because, you know, if Coco is just waiting around for either Iga to be kicked out by Naomi Osaka or, you know, meet her in the final, because now they're 1 and 2 in the world. So now they're just going to
be in the final. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, if they keep meeting in the final, but Iga keeps still winning, that's still a problem. So I would love to see how her and her team respond to the problem of Iga, and because that will only make her better. Can you imagine? I mean, if she's beating Iga, she's beating the whole field. I'm actually more excited more for their rivalry than I've ever been, because now they're 1 and 2 in the world. And I'm like, let's go, let's battle it out.
That's a great point. I completely agree. Like in terms of, like you said, Anastasia, how players make each other better. So, of course, we've established the matchup is horrible in terms of when you look at it from Coco's point of view. But at the same time, like you, I am actually quite excited to see going forward how it evolves, because Coco is still improving. Obviously, Iga is too, as well. But I feel like there is such... The disparity is massive on clay, of course. But then also, Coco's arguably her strongest surface is clay, you could argue. So it's like... What needs to be done, like you said, to like kind of tweak what's going to make the difference for her to basically be more of a challenge? And I feel like that is something that she's also trying to figure out. One thing I will say, though, going into that match, I don't think the matchup in terms of like the head-to-head, I don't think that's something Coco is thinking I don't think it's something Coco thinks about when she goes into a match. I really don't. It's crazy. I know maybe it's mad to think that, but I really believe that she just goes into every single match thinking, you know what, I've got a chance here to win. Like, and not even got a chance, I'm going in to win. Because that's just the way she's kind of built. That's how I feel anyway. And I'd love to ask her, but like maybe it'd be interesting to see if she was to like get put if that question was to get put to her, like what her answer would be. But that's how I feel. I really do believe that's how she kind of goes into like every match, and especially against someone like Iga, who, I mean, she has beaten. She beat her last year, was it Cincinnati?
Yeah.
So it's not like she's never beaten her. So she can beat her, but of course the record is like, it's crazy. But I feel like the time will come, like I said, on clay as well. Like it's going to happen for her. Like, I've got no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of her doubles run? Because that was just the most joyful, unexpected result of this tournament.
It was a last minute partnership as well, she said.
Yeah.
Like they decided like 2 days before, I think. They reached out to her and just started playing. And as it was going, I was like, oh my gosh, I think she might actually face Paolini and Errani. And then the semifinals, and then when Paolini won, I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. It's actually happening. So it was fun. The doubles finals was honestly a very fun match. They were both, like, all four of them were really great. It was really cool. So I'm really glad that she left with something. And that will continue to like boost her up as well. And she's been playing doubles for a while, you know, like she said, it was her third final. And the fact that she's done that with a complete different partner just shows to you that.
Their first tournament together too. Like, that's crazy.
The first tournament, yeah. It's a shame that they're not from the same country. But they have played together at the Olympics. I am curious to know who she's going to play with, because Pegula's not ready. I thought maybe Taylor Townsend, but she's injured as well. Not sure she'll be fit.
I want to say Pegula's back. Pegula's back this week. She's playing on the grass somewhere. I think it may be Nottingham.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so, yeah. She's like top seed.
Yeah, I did see her. Okay. Let's see. We'll see. I'm really curious to see who she will play with. But either way, it shows that, you know. And when they were both playing, sorry, what was her partner's name again? This is
Katrina Siniakova.
Yeah. So when they were playing like together, like you could see that they were so like they had a game plan. They were always talking. They were always like, you know, they looked like they had a good relationship together, and not just between them two, but also with the team. Because even Coco was thanking her dad and stuff, and they were all together and stuff. So yeah, I'm really happy for them. It was a brilliant final from both. In all honesty, and even for Errani, like she hasn't reached a doubles final for a very long time. And she's getting to that time or like, you know, in her career where, you know, because she even said herself, like she's not sure she's going to keep on playing. So I'm sure they're going to play doubles together at the Olympics, and that'll be great. If they can bag that together, that'll be a great way to, you know, soon be ending your career and stuff. So yeah, it was brilliant.
Anastasia, your thoughts on Coco's doubles?
I thought it was great. I thought, you know, doubles is a really interesting medium, and it's really funny when you watch a doubles match and the partners don't get along. Like, you can tell they're not on the same page. So when Coco and Siniakova, when they got together, I thought, oh, this is new. I wonder how they're going to do. Like, how are they, you know, they've never played before together. Are they just going to gel really well? Because I think Coco was a place to play with Taylor Townsend. I'm not sure that was actually going to happen. Yeah. So, and I was excited for that. I was like, Taylor Townsend and Coco Gauff. Sure. I was ready. But I was wondering, okay, how will this go? And it's so cute to just see, like, they gel together. They got each other. Their communication on court was always great. I actually watched at least four of their matches. I watched a lot of their matches. And just, they were really, really cute together and fun. And I was like, oh, this is a great partnership. And then they were in the finals. I was like, how did that happen? So it's one of those fortuitous events of a Grand Slam. And I love to see it. And good for Coco finally getting, she's been in so many finals. She finally got her Grand Slam doubles title. Now all she needs is a mixed, you know, Ben Shelton. We're waiting for you. It's okay.
You can definitely see that coming. Definitely. At some point. It's got to happen.
Yeah.
I also want to like quickly just talk about Ons Jabeur. Like, so yeah, she made it to the quarterfinals, I want to say. And then that's where she fell to Coco. But yeah, Jabeur, Jahmyr Jenkins, friend of the pod, he's now working with Jabeur, which I completely missed.
I missed that too. I saw him in the box and I thought, oh, is that?
I don't think he was in the box before though, because when you checked up and stuff, like he was like, yeah, it's been a while. Man, I was thinking, but where have you been? You were not in a box.
So he said, yeah, we reached out to him and he said, basically they've been working together since Indian Wells this year. But he was like, oh, the results haven't been resulting. That's why no one's really taken notice. Which I was like, fair play. But again, I was quite annoyed that I missed that.
But it's good
to see Jabeur playing at this level, like, because obviously she struggled this year. So just nice to see her playing, like kind of getting back to like her best. And she actually beat Sasha Vickery, another friend of the pod, in the first round. Vickery was a wild card coming in. But then lost to Coco in that free setter. Well, did you guys enjoy that match with Coco? Like, did you?
I enjoyed that match, and I felt like personally, someone disagreed with me, but I felt like that match should have been a night match personally.
Okay,
you know Roland Garros and their night match. And
I didn't want to get political on this.
Well, I'm just saying.
One thing I'm going to say, and obviously I'm a guy, like, so. Yeah, take this how you want. I do find it quite interesting how the female players, they often like shout out Amelie Mauresmo, who was obviously the tournament director. And it's like, what? If they weren't happy, they wouldn't do that. And I feel like I don't think they're being forced to do that. Like, they're doing that because they generally mean like they're happy they're happy with the kind of, I say service, the way the tournaments run, basically. And also, Lucy, I'm going to say it, a lot of women players and men players, they don't like playing night matches. Look at Novak Djokovic finishing at 3 a.m. in the morning. Like,
no. Okay. So, first of all, and your first point is a mix, because there were also some players like raising the issue and saying it's not fair. And Ons, funny enough, she was the most vocal one.
Yeah, I did see Ons.
And I think for Ons, for example, the reason why it, before that, I didn't really pay attention to it, but the reason why with that match specifically is because she has a massive support in France, because she's Tunisian and stuff.
Yeah,
the crowd was good. Like, it was a really fun match. And also Coco's also American. How do Americans going to be watching the match if it's on at 11 a.m. or whatever time it was on? Do you get what I mean?
It was actually I think it was on at like 5 a.m. because I woke up for it. Yeah, so it started at 5 a.m. Eastern to watch. And, I have mixed feelings about the whole night match situation. Mm-hmm. In that particular one, I understood, because literally, I think it was an hour and a half after the match was over, Coco had a doubles match. It's kind of like, maybe could they have scheduled it differently so Coco wasn't going back to back like that? Because I think a lot of Coco's matches had to be early because she literally played doubles right after. So there's that part of it. But you're right, with the crowd support that Ons has and Coco, that would have been a fire night match.
Yeah. And it was a quality match. The first set was incredible. Like, it was it was worth like putting it, But mm-hmm. I know there are some players that do also like for example, Iga, she likes to play during the day mainly. I think Nadal is the same as well. Mm. Can't remember.
Mm-hmm. I think Sabalenka has also said she likes, daytime.
She likes the day, yeah. So yeah.
Christopher Eubanks, he says, yeah.
But those are top players. That's the thing. They can get up and be like, I only want to play. If Iga was world number 9E, they would have been like, girl, go to that court at 7 p.m. Don't ask me for anything. So you have to work hard to even get to that, to have that privilege to be like, I want to work. I want to do my matches only during the day. So it is what it is. Either way, I'm really happy for Ons. It was exciting to see her with positive like energy and playing very good matches. And I'm really glad that she's doing this right before Wimbledon, because I was kind of scared of how she will feel going to Wimbledon with the way that she's been playing. So I'm happy that she had like really good matches, even though it's a complete different surface. But I'm hoping that it will help her mentally.
Yeah, it's perfect timing.
Because I'm very scared for Ons for grass, in a way of like, I don't want her to put too much pressure on herself like she did last year, because it really affected her. So I hope she's like happy, healthy, and good, you know, whether she makes it far or not, it is what it is, you know. But yeah, I just hope that she's just good. But it was nice to like seeing her play. Anyway, it was a fantastic match with Coco.
Yeah, no, well said. Yeah. I want to speak about Naomi Osaka. We definitely need to speak about Naomi Osaka.
I'm so ready. I'm just clearing my grass calendar.
I think Iga lost, I think 32 games. I saw this in a report. I think it's Simon Briggs at the Telegraph. He wrote about it, saying that basically, yeah, Iga lost something like 32 games. Nearly half of those were to Naomi Osaka.
the whole tournament. That match was the match of the fucking tournament. Let's just get that
for
straight.
Me, definitely.
Yep.
Definitely.
100%. No, 200%.
We have
300%.
300%. We have not spoken about any other match. Like that Osaka match we've spoken about.
Male or female. Like, yeah.
Male or female. That's what I'm saying. Male or female. It didn't even top that messy ass semi-final that we watched yesterday, respectfully. Like, it would literally, it topped it. It was just amazing. Like, amazing. And it just made me so excited for tennis. Because even like, people who don't regularly watch tennis were watching a match as well. Like, it was actually, it was just so much fun. But honestly, with that match, I was just, there was one thing I kind of always said, I don't know if I said it on the pod or not, but I remember when Osaka started, when she came back, a lot of people were like, she needs to play more of like the smaller tournaments and stuff.
And 250s and...
yeah. And my thing is, I generally think Osaka is the type of player that is more motivated and driven when she's like against a crazy competitor, like someone who is like at the top level, because that's going to bring the best out of her, because she is a very competitive person. She wants to win. She has her goals. And it's like, she saw Iga. She was like, I don't care what you've been doing, but I'm going to beat you today. And she was literally so close. And it was just... it was actually like a fun match. It wasn't even a thing of like, oh, Iga's out. It was generally a fun match, like throughout the entire like three sets and stuff. Even after the first set, because she lost the first set, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was tight. 7-5, yeah.
Yeah, we were 7-5 and stuff. But even after that, I was like, even if she loses this match, I am happy as fuck. Like literally after that first set, second set, she bags it. Third set, it was just crazy. But I hope like she's so like I hope that she's proud of herself, because honestly, playing like that and you've been off for so long and you're playing against the number one player on her best surface. Listen, big babe tennis is back. She's bringing it back. This is what we miss. Like, it was just so exciting. Like, it was just insane. And that's why I was like, please, Osaka, like, be nice to yourself after this match, man. She did say that she cried, which I can understand because when you have like match point and stuff, but fuck me, like that was just, I was so happy, yet she didn't even win. I was so happy because I was like, she's back, she's here. This is what I wanted to
on
see.
On clay as well, like.
On clay, Naomi, you know.
Who would have thought?
Honestly, it was a fantastic match from both. Like, even Iga was crying herself. Like, she was like, she was rattled. She mentioned it even on her speech when she won. I was like, bro, that's been on your mind for a long time, huh? Literally, she won at the final. I was like, bro, that's 10 days ago, girl. Like, that really is haunting you, huh?
Shout out
to both of them, honestly.
Anastasia, do you think Osaka could be a thing on clay?
Yes. The answer is yes. So, you know, I had very, very measured expectations of Osaka coming back. She's coming back from maternity, hasn't played for a while. The game has changed a little bit even since she's been gone. So I wasn't expecting anything. And then on clay, I really wasn't expecting anything. I was like, you know, let's just see where she goes. I was so happy she got through her first round match. We got to like the second round match, because you just also kind of want to see what her level is against the top player in the world. But I wasn't expecting anything. I was like, she's going to lose in straight sets, but I'll be proud. She's going to get like 7 games, hopefully, you know, make it a 3-4. Let's be happy and keep it moving. The way I was standing in front of my television for the whole, I was just like,
yo,
what? I was calling people. I was like, what? I was like, are you watching? What's happening? Are you watching what I'm watching? It was incredible. And it literally changed my whole idea for the rest of the season. And maybe I'm pumping it up too much or whatever, but I was just like, if the rest of the tour is looking at Naomi Osaka, who's been gone for however long, taking Iga to a third, what are you guys doing?
Nuts.
Get it together. Naomi Osaka honestly, is coming facts. For all your trophies, okay?
Facts.
And you better no. be ready.
And that's how I felt. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, it took Osaka, who literally gave birth like 2 days ago, to shake the table here. No. But it's funny because even before the match, like, everyone was like, yeah, blockbuster. And I was like, guys, this is going to be a quick thing. Like, Iga's going to break my heart. You know, Osaka is where it is. Like, when I saw it, like, I did not. I'm going to put my hands up. I generally did not see, like, Iga's basically the boogeyman right now.
Hold on.
Not too much on me. Chill on me. There's a difference between being a fan and being realistic. I am someone where, I'm a pessimist. Mm. I'm already like, I saw Osaka, Iga, I was like, fuck, it is what it is. But not in a way of like, I can say I did not expect Osaka to win.
Fair play.
So that's why I was just like, man, this match is going to be, you know, whatnot, whatever, innit? What she played like, I don't think a single person, not even her team, expected that level. I think only her and that little notepad knew what she was going to on that
notepad.
That notepad that she's holding like this, that is literally the only two things that knew that, yeah, she was going to like do damage. Because before, I didn't get it. I was like, why am I going to watch this match? It's going to drive me insane. But just like you, I was in front of my TV. I was shouting. I was stressed out. I was like, it's been a very long time I felt like this watching a match. And that was the exciting thing. And I'm just hoping that, you know, we can translate that into grass. I am so excited for grass season for Osaka. I've said this for such a long time that I feel like her game on grass is just great. And she's playing a lot of tournaments. She's playing quite a few and I'm really excited about that. And I think that match actually boosted her up. Like, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. Because even though she cried, like even she even said it herself. And she even said one nice little bar, literally at the press. So she was like, yeah, I cannot wait to play Iga again on my surface. She's like, yeah, when we go on hardcore, you're coming to my office. Yeah, it's going to be a different story. When she said that, I was like, talk your shit. So I think that match really pumped her up. And I'm so, so, so excited. Like, honestly, I don't think she realizes what she's done at that tournament. Like, we were just like so happy, so excited. And yeah, tennis was alive that day, man.
No, honestly. Big time. I love that, guys. Like, really great points on Osaka. And yeah, just reasons to be excited. Like, we've always said, yes, tennis is better with her, like, playing. And like, for her to be playing at this level, like, already, like, so early on, or so early into her comeback, like, yeah, it's massive. So, exciting times ahead, man, for Team Naomi Osaka. Let's talk a bit about the earlier rounds. So, we had Madison Keys. She fell to Emma Navarro in the third round, which was surprising for me. Like, I was expecting Keys to at least make second week. Like, she's usually a banker for the second week.
My prediction was she was going to go at least semifinals, quarterfinals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's what I had.
And we kind of said sneaky, she could possibly win it. Like, we were saying.
Yeah, because her form was out of this world.
Yeah.
So when I saw that she was into Navarro, I was like, what are we doing here?
But Navarro is a sneaky good player, though, man. Like, again, I think she's the 22nd seed. Like, so she was one of the top 32 seeds. But, like, again, she's been putting in registering wins, like, consistently for, I'd say, the past season and a bit, Anastasia. Like, do you know much about Navarro's game?
Yeah, I do. And So you're right. She is one of those sort of sneaky players. And I think she had extra motivation this year because she really wanted to qualify for the Olympics.
True,
like she
yeah.
really wanted to qualify for the Olympics. And there are just so many American women. It's tough. And mm-hmm. I think if she needed to beat Madison and then get through to her next round. But I think she was stopped her next round. And then Danielle Collins went one above her. So right now, she's actually out. Navarro's oh, wow. out of the qualification yeah, for the Olympics.
Yeah, because Collins the one who's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So she, I think she had double extra motivation that had really nothing to do with the French Open. She really just wanted to make it to the Olympics. But you're right. I was actually, even with that, I was still shocked that Madison Keys didn't make it. She had just won a title. She just beat Danielle Collins winning a title.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I kind of was like a little shocked by that. But Navarro, man,
it was a very tight match though. Both went to yeah. tie breaks. You know, yeah. stats wise, it was literally named the same. Like I think Navarro only had one more break point like chances than Keys. Like it was really, really tight. Anyway,
I want to say because I that was on a Saturday, so I was at work, obviously. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Keys was up a break in both sets.
I think so. I can't remember, but all I remember is that it was very tight anyway. Yeah, so it wasn't like a thing where she just went there, just did nothing.
But like you said at a stage, you're like the motivation, there's extra motivation for Navarro.
That makes sense.
So that probably was the kind of main contributing mm-hmm. factor, you could say.
Yeah.
So yeah. Fair play. Sloane Stephens, 2018 runner-up. So she fell in the first round to Yulia Putintseva. When we did the draw preview, we were like, yeah, that is a horrible draw for our girl Sloane. Mm. And it turned out to be that way, unfortunately. Yeah, again, with Sloane, though, she plays well in Paris. So I was expecting more.
She's always second week at Paris.
But at the same time, the to get Putintseva first round, that is an awful draw.
And I think, is that just a matchup thing? Because then Putintseva was out the next round.
Lucy?
No comment.
No comment, Lucy says. Fair play. No
okay. We'll carry on.
let's give some props now to Hayley Baptiste. So she came in as a lucky loser. And yeah, she made a run to the second round. So she lost to the eventual runner-up, Jasmine Paolini, in round two. But she got a good win against fellow American Kayla Day in the first round. I want to say that was a free setter as well. So really nice to see Baptiste. And she's one of those players as well. She's broken into the top 100, but then dropped out again. I think she's back in now off the back of...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So again, like we just hope she can kind of stay there now in terms of being inside the top 100 and just keep building from that. Also, we need to shout out some of the juniors. So we did post about 17-year-old Gloriana Nahu from Benin, Nigeria's neighbor.
Yeah.
Shouts out. So yeah, she became the first female player from Benin to win a Grand Slam match. She did lose in the second round, unfortunately, but again, Anastasia, like we that's one of the reasons why we do this podcast and this platform. Like we love seeing African players come through. Like it's amazing. So hopefully that's a name we'll be kind of seeing more. Like she's only 17. So sure. Probably has another year left on the junior circuit before she like enters the pros.
Yeah.
Did you see any of her matches?
I didn't really watch any of the juniors until I stumbled on the men's junior finals last year. But it's, you know, which is why I really, really love what you do, because you highlight all these players who are coming up from Africa. And it's like, why are there not more coming up? And I think there's a lot of it that's an accessibility issue, just the way the tennis tour is structured. It's a lot of travel. Like you have to have so much funds to be able to travel. And, you know, a lot of these players are not necessarily getting a lot of support from their federations in their country. So I think the more it's highlighted, the more they become more popular, and the more they turn up at these events, hopefully it will encourage more people to not only play, but to give it a shot. And we need a tournament in Africa, somewhere that's not in Morocco or Tunisia, because yes, those are great. It's really great to have those tournaments there, but it's such a hip, you know, it's just a skip away from Europe. So it's not really, they're not doing much by just going to Tunisia or going to Morocco. Mm-hmm. You need a tournament in sub-Saharan Africa, I think. 100%. And I think there was a challenger that happened recently that
Rwanda.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like more of that, like more tournaments highlighting the continent and also the players that play there, because that's the only way they then get to jump into the tour and become part of it and have the sport grow that way. So
facts. Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. We also shout out Tara Grant, the American. So she's 16-year-old. She reached the semifinals in the girls' singles, and she also was runner-up in the doubles with Iva Jovic. Obviously, they won the Australian Open earlier this year.
Yeah.
And then in the boys' event, so there was a new name that we're now familiar with, 15-year-old wild card, Moise Kwame. So for me, that sounds Ivorian. I'm going to say Ivorian, but he represents France. But I think parents are Ivorian, but we do need to check that. So he reached the quarterfinals, and this was his Grand Slam debut.
And he was just a wild card,
which is nuts. So, we're going to post about his run like after this, but I think he's ranked like 140 something in the junior rankings. He beat he won three matches. All of those matches were against players ranked above him, including the world junior number 5. So this is a special talent, and he's only 15. So we're going to be seeing a lot more of him, and we'll definitely be tracking him as well, like as he progresses. We need to talk about the men, and like we've been on, we've been talking for a minute, so we kind of need to race through. But let's start with Felix Ojeadeyasim. So he made second week, losing to the eventual finalist, Carlos Alcaraz, who's about to start his final right now as we speak. But just on Felix, like, did you guys see many of his matches? Like, what matches stood out to you? And like, yeah, what were you saying about Felix Ojeadeyasim?
I think he's making a slow comeback, because after that Madrid run, where, you know, the draw fell on his side, and that happens a lot in tournaments. You know, some people are lucky, some people are not, but it was nice to see him start playing well. He had some good matches there as well, then going into Rome. So I think it's slow and steady for Felix. It's slower than I thought it would be, because I remember when he was injured, and I thought, okay, he's just going to come back and jump right back to where he was before. So it's definitely been a slow comeback for FAA, but I think he's there. I think he, you know, I know how you feel about his team, Lucy. I know.
Well, to be fair, Uncle Nadal is gone. So
yes, ish. That's true.
Audi.
Which, I mean, again, he said he was a consultant.
I told Eugene. Okay. I think he's respectfully said that he's fired. And me and Eugene had this debate. And I was like, he did not say it really. And Eugene's like, no, he's not really part of the team. I'm like, no. That's not good, man. You have to say it straight how it is. But there are some people who do say that they also won the rest, not even just Uncle like Nadal and stuff, blah, blah, blah. But for me, I think during like Roland Garros, I mean, the fact that he made all the way to quarterfinals and lost to someone who's on form.
It was round four. He lost.
Oh, round four, sorry. Yeah. Round four, on form, who's a finalist, who was a semi-finalist last year. And literally the only reason why he even lost that final is because of nerves. It's not like he can't play. I'm not too mad at that, because all these other matches, he played really well. Like, he was playing really, really well. The one against Nishioka, I know Nishioka is Nishioka, but still, he played really well. It was
Nishikori.
Yeah. Sorry, oh, yes, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah,
Sorry, it is the joke. I'm getting
yeah, I was about to say, my bad. I'm going crazy, yeah. But even his second round, I think he lost like the second set, but you know, he still pushed for it again. The one with Shelton, he literally played so well. Yeah. So he is getting there. And I think, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe during the Olympics be going pretty far. But I think just like you said, Anastasia, like he's getting there, just taking a little bit longer. I won't say for me expected, more of like, I think I'm just being greedy and I'm being trying to like rush the process, you know, because he's a great player and I want to see him go far, especially at the Roland Garros. Like clay is clearly the thing that he likes. Well, I mean, he does have hard court titles, of course, but I feel like he plays really well on clay and he's been so close at Roland Garros. I think maybe he's like Stevens, when he gets the French Open, he's like locked in. So yeah, so he plays some really good matches. Honestly, this clay season, he's leveled up slowly, but he's getting there. And grass season, I'll be looking forward to him.
I'll just say, listen, Felix is 22 years old, so like he's got a lot of time on his hands. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like, yeah, he's making
steady progress. I forget that.
Come on, man.
Like, I really forget how young he is all the time. Every time I hear it, I'm like, yeah. Wait, what?
And he has achieved a lot. He's achieved a lot. Obviously, he's not like Carlos Alcaraz level, or you can say Yannick Sinner now as well, but he's that caliber of player and he will get back to that level 100%. Shelton, I think nicely mentioned, Lucy, like he did play a good match, or I say play a good match. He reached the third round, lost to Felix in that third round. I don't think he was fully fit. Like he didn't play
Shelton
particularly well, yeah, against Felix.
He wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
He wasn't. Yeah.
Do you know what the problem was?
It was a shoulder. Yeah.
Shoulder.
Okay. It was a shoulder thing.
Wearing the sleeve as well. Like he's not fully. Fully kind of there at the moment. So I hope that's something that improves before the grass. Because again,
I think it's more of a clay thing. Even though he won a clay title, I generally think. Clay is a surface that Shelton would be great at, but he just need a lot more time on it. And I noticed that since last year when I was watching him play, I was like, you're fantastic, you just need a little bit more experience on it.
This is only his second Roland Garros. Exactly,
this is what I'm saying, his second Roland Garros, his second full like, you know, ATP tour year outside of the country and stuff. So I think with him it's just a matter of time. So I think the injury did play into it a little bit, but I think it's a thing of like, he just needs to get used to the surface. And I think he might even, who knows, it might be the same again with grass, hence why with hard court, he's doing so well. He literally won a title at the end of the year and stuff. So, you know, Australian Open, he made it really far. US Open, he made it really far. But it's two surfaces, two other surfaces. And to me, it kind of makes sense. I mean, you've been stuck in America since you were born. And now you're out here playing against Spaniards or people who've been traveling up and down since they were young. Of course, they're going to know what to get used to. And then maybe that could even lead into injury. Your body is like, what the hell am I doing in here? Like, well, I'm not used to this. So that's why I'm not too thing on Shelton. But at least he collected a title at a clay season. Not a lot of people did.
True, yeah,
true he story. Still collected one. But even that, it was a clay in the US. See?
So, different.
Yeah, but shout out to him.
Yeah.
And Anastasia, what are your views on Shelton as well? Like as an American too, like it must be, well, yeah, just explain like kind of, I guess, I say hype, it's not hype because he's 20, he's top 20, like it's justified. Yeah. But yeah, how is he viewed in America basically?
I mean, he's already a star here because he's just so charismatic. You know what I mean? I mean, the whole, you know, that, it was over. Over. He was a star, you know, but just what you said, he's top in the live rankings. He's top 15 in the world. This is his second season. That's
crazy.
He's already won, you know, so that's super crazy. And he hasn't even, because he's still learning, he's still experiencing the tour and doing all these things. And he's a charismatic person. I recorded a podcast yesterday talking about like fashion kits and things like that. And I remember talking about how I didn't really like the On kit the first time I saw the photo, but you saw that On kit on Ben Shelton? Like, damn.
Yeah.
Why does it look so good?
on the picture, I was like, what the hell is this kit, bro? But then when really? He put it on, I was like, oh, you put that shit on.
I mean, so he has that aura already, and he plays well, and he's learning and growing. It's great. He's already a star here, you know, when he was playing doubles with Taylor Townsend at the US Open.
Absolute vibes.
At Wimbledon
it
as
was
well.
Like oh, a party. Playing.
Yeah.
It was a even party on his court. You know, people always talk about quiet when they're playing during. No, it was a party. And that's what you want. You want those sort of characters in tennis. So it's not just so like, you know, back and forth and you get that energy and stuff. So I think he's going to go far. I think he's going to sell the sport in the States as well. Kind of like Tiafo started it and then Ben Shelton's taking over. And yet, you know, people talk about how in the States we need an American male Grand Slam winner because we haven't had one since Roddick. It's been a while. And Shelton came on the scene. I was like, watch out. It's going to be Shelton. It's going to be Shelton. He's on that level.
Wow. I love that. Absolutely love that. Gael Monfils, home favorite. He made it to the second round, lost to Lorenzo Musetti. Did get a good win against Thiago Szabocz-Wild. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. The Brazilian. That was a four set win. During that match, I loved, because I watched most of it. I was loving like, how the camera kept cutting to Monfils' family, like in his player box. It's like you saw his sister in there. I want to say his mom and dad as well. And I just love seeing like the players' families, like when they're like at these events. And it's mainly Grand Slams, you see that. But yeah, Monfils obviously being, you know, French, like Paris crowd, they obviously love him and take to him. Wasn't able to kind of give Musetti much of a challenge, I thought, but obviously, Musetti is a quality player, much younger as well. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Monfils quickly.
I mean, I love him, and he, again, another entertainer, the original, you know. And you're right, his family. I got to see a few of his matches in person at Indian Wells, and I was always so shocked by how. His wife was always in the box as well. Like his whole family. It's like they all traveled together and played tennis
together. I think his mom started to travel more recently with him, which is cute.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because now obviously he's a dad, so that there's a kid to look after. So
that is makes true. Sense. No. Yeah, that's true. But I think it is cute that they all sort of travel together and, you know, it's a tennis family.
No, it is definitely. Francis Tiafoe also lost in the second round. So he lost to Denis Shapovalov and that got a bit
testy.
I mean,
just a little bit.
The thing is, Tiafoe, he's got previous. He, do you remember when he hit, I think it was Federer, he hit Federer with the body shot at the Labour Cup, and like social media lost its shit, like, which is a completely legal shot in tennis. So like, let's just clear that up. But yeah, Shapovalov took issue, he didn't like it. And there was like a bit of a, I don't know, it was friction, I guess. But I think they're cool. Like, I think they're actually friends, like away from the court. Well, like,
to be fair, I think during that match when that happened, you can tell that Tiafoe, like she, like, cause he was just like, you could tell he didn't want the extra drama. Shapovalov, however, though, he kept on like pushing it. So I don't know. I won't be surprised if the dynamic of the friendship changed now. Because even at the net, when you're trying to do a handshake, Francis was so cool. And Shapovalov was trying to be like, oh, drama. Like, I felt a bad vibe from him. Like, if you didn't see it, it's because it was Francis that was putting in the effort to not make it a big thing. Because even like during the match, Francis was just like, bro, I just want to play. Like, let's go. Like, Shapovalov kept on, you know, going on and on and on and on. And it's like, we didn't even do it on purpose. And the fact that it's coming from Shapovalov.
It's funny because I think different players use different things to sort of pump themselves up. And at a time I thought, because Shapovalov just kept going. I was like, this happened like a while ago. Like, what's happening? I was like, huh, I wonder if he's using this as kind of to rev himself up for the match and just
because
he
played so much better after that. Because that first set, Francis was like, he was fantastic. Like there was also
rain delay as well, which isn't great.
Rain delays, but really intrigued that. But after, I genuinely thought Francis was going to win that match in like four sets or something like that. Because there was a little bit too much like unforced errors on the first set, but the serves and everything, like he was like, then Dennis didn't know what he was doing. And then Shapo out of nowhere after that, literally after that argument, he leveled up like crazy. And I was just like, so I definitely feel, yes, Anastasia, like maybe he did use that to, you know, distract everything, but yeah, what it is.
Yeah, I think Francis is pretty happy to kind of get away from the clay and like move on to grass.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
100%. Fingers crossed we can make some deep runs on the grass. I'm going to talk about the young French guys. So let's talk Giovanni Pecci-Pericard first. So the Lyon champion, fantastic. Yes. First ATP tour title for him in Lyon. He lost to David Goffin in the first round, which is a horrible draw. Although he did, and we should have mentioned it in our preview pod, he did actually beat Goffin. I think it was in Antwerp last year, Pecci-Pericard. But yeah, he ended up losing in five sets to Goffin in the first round at Roland Garros. This was also quite controversial because there was a lot of like talk in the media afterwards about that, how rowdy the French crowd were, which I found hilarious. Goffin took issue. Apparently he had like gum spat at him.
That was crazy,
that's nuts. But in terms of like the French passion and like just kind of, they're known for that. Like, I don't know if you guys would maybe can elaborate.
Like they give the football stadium energy,
and I like it,
which is soccer for you guys, and I love it. Literally, when everyone was complaining, because Iga complained a little bit as well after her match with Osaka, then David Goffin complained as well, to a point where they changed a rule and saying that you can't drink alcohol near the court. Now let me tell you, based on experience by me and Eugene last year, that is the dumbest rule, and it will make it even worse, because Eugene and I, we went to Roland Garros last year. We will after the matches and stuff, we're like, you know what? Let's go get some champagne. Why not? You know, we're here. We're there as fans. Yeah. We're there as fans. We were not there as media. We get to the center court now, and the guys were like, the staff was like, you can't bring an alcohol here. And we were like, what? We didn't know. So bear in mind, we had to drink quickly a glass of champagne, quickly, like we were just downing it.
Yeah.
And if you drink alcohol, you know that is not how you're supposed to be drinking it. So by the time we sat down, we were like, yo, we were lit. We were like, yeah, let's get crazy. Like we had to step out, get some water and get some snacks, you know. So if you're saying that to people, they're going to down 10 drinks and then go to the stand and be literally what, like they didn't think this through. They just did not think this through. I don't, and
whacked.
The funniest thing, I don't think it's even the alcohol. I think just the French people. I just think that's just how they are.
And that's the thing. I don't think it has to do with alcohol at all. And yes, people should not be spitting at players. 100%. People should not 100%. Be. I think it was Sebi Korda who in Rome,
where
he, I guess basically every time he was serving from one side, the people behind him were basically talking shit about his family. Why are you making it personal? So that part I don't like, but in general, that match between Pericard and Goffin was one of my amazing favorite matches to watch, because the vibes were vibing. I mean, they were chanting his name. They were singing. The flag was flying. I was like, this is what Grand Slam tennis is. Like, this is what Grand Slam tennis is. Not like, you know, Philippe Chatrier that's half empty and, you know, it's a big court. No, it's the tiny, small court where you can almost touch the players exciting.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, as long as everyone's respectful. Please, if you're listening to this, fans, do not spit at people. But bring the energy. Yeah. I loved that. Like, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I like the players who can give it back. Remember Taylor Fritz last year, where he was like, at the end, he was like, watch, you know, he did the whole shush thing gave it back to the French fans.
Even Chapeau, actually, to be fair, I want to say it was in Rome as well. He was talking to the umpire and the crowd were like shouting. That's one of my favorite clips on like tennis Twitter. But no, I completely agree, Anastasia. And like what you said, Lucy, too, like now fans are just going to literally get completely wired lit before coming in, coming into the grounds or the stadiums. So good luck. Good luck in Paris. Have you been to Paris, Anastasia? Have you been to Roland Garros?
No, it's on the bucket list.
When you go, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. But it's something that I definitely picked up on last year being there. It was my first time. I do feel like the crowd, if there's something different about the Paris crowd.
Yeah.
And I can't really put like my finger on what it is, but
I've always been a fan of it, man. I've always said it. And what I like is that it's not always only in Roland Garros. Even in an Australian Open, and the French players playing,
they travel.
Like, what?
They're
shouting, they're screaming. Like, that is, I want this for all sports. As long as it's done, like you said, Asia, as long as it's done respectfully, which is in every sport, anyways, in every sport is like that. And then if someone goes crazy, they suffer the consequences. How many times in football has that happened where, you know, they're
rejected?
The white fans would say like racist slurs or do like racist signs. And then the very next day they're either fired or, you know, the police are involved. We can do the same in tennis. Hello. They were hunting down the guy that threw the gum. I don't think they found him though. But apparently they were hunting him down. But it is what it is, man. Shout out to Goffin and Birka for that match. That was a very, very fun match.
Definitely. We should also talk about Arthur Thies as well. So he was the 29th seed. Again, he lost to the Italian Matteo Arnaldi, who, again, the matchup is crazy. Like, he has a losing record against Arnaldi. And that was a four-set defeat for Thies. We're not in France, so like we can't see like the media reaction, but it just had me thinking like there's a lot of pressure on these young French guys, like especially Thies being a seed, and he wasn't the only seed to fall in the first round as well. So I've got here Hugo Humbert, the 17th seed, he also fell in the first round, as did Adrian Mannarino, the 22nd seed. I just feel like when you're from a Grand Slam nation, like there is like extra pressure and like kind of expectation on you because you're from one of the major Grand Slam nations, and like you're kind of almost expected to be, I don't want to say great, but like basically represent and like reach a certain standard or level. And I just feel like that is maybe unfair. Like I don't know, there's obviously advantages as well, because obviously the funding,
but it's always been a thing though, and a lot of times players who, for example, how can I explain it? Like a lot of times, like players will win their top slams are not even from their own home country or even the surface that they grew up in, you know?
Yeah.
Serena has so many, like Wimbledon was one of her best surfaces. She didn't grow up in grass. She literally grew up in the hood in Compton and minding her own. Do you get what I mean? Like, it's just like these different types. I think it's very, I don't know. I just feel like it's something that's always going to happen in the sport. And I feel like it's not even just tennis. I think it's all sports either way. You know, in football, even when you guys are playing, if Arsenal's playing home and they lose that, is, you know, they still that. Do you get what I mean? I just feel like it's just like a normal sport thing. That's unfortunate. I don't feel like it's fair. But to me, I don't want to use the word pressure. I think it's still good to, because they get that, it's a plus because, they get the pressure, but they also get extra eyes. They get more fans. Yeah. They get more people like tuning in, because when it's the Grand Slams, that's when you're getting a lot of people who don't watch tennis to like the next Grand Slam, or probably the only Grand Slam, like only from their home. And they're like, oh, who is this player? Oh, who is this? Do you get what I mean? So at the same time, it's like, I get it. Like, it's an extra pressure, but it is what it is. Like, it's your home. You have to, especially like in tennis, it's all about like the countries, and some people are playing for their country. So it's still a big thing. It's a shame. I think with the French players, it is worse because this year, all first round, they got knocked out.
Yeah.
So
it was very tough.
It was really rough. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you felt it a little bit more this time for them. But I hear what you mean, but I'm like 50-50 with it. Because it's just, it just happens everywhere. It's not just a tennis thing.
Anastasia, what are your kind of views? Like, do you see where I'm coming from or not really?
Oh, no, no. I totally see where you're coming from. I kind of wanted to just touch on Artur Vieth a little bit. He, because I think he's going through somewhat of a sophomore slump. Because he came out last year and I was like, ooh, he's the French Ben Shelton. He's so cool. His social media, ooh, so cool. I'm just like,
yeah,
okay.
True.
The ladies love Artur as well. Let's just be real.
When he signed with Lacoste, I was like, oh, okay. Yes, let's go. So he's great. He's fresh. He's young. I love his style a lot. And I think after this loss, he fired his coach.
I don't know if you guys saw that, but he
switched up his coach. So, you know, I think maybe he's going through a few changes and stuff. And I just hope he gets back to winning. Because remember, I think it was Tokyo when Ben Shelton was playing Tokyo. And then he was, you know, Arthur was a different tournament.
And they
signed the glass. The camera, at each other. That's, I want more of that. More of that, 100%. Like that makes tennis fun and exciting. So, you know, hopefully Arthur will find his form and, you know, try and figure out how to beat Matteo Arnaldi because it's rough. I've watched them both play. I've watched two of their matches, one at the US Open last year and then the other one at Miami. And it's tough. You're just like, he doesn't know what to do yet. And I'm waiting for him to figure it out. Like that would be fun once he does.
It's gonna happen. And just on the coaches as well. So he had two coaches. So it was Sergi Bruguera, who he fired or has left the team now. And now he's just working with Sebastian Grosjean, obviously a former top French player himself. So again, like when you kind of see that things aren't working, you make changes, and that's what he's done. And again, he's super young. So that's what I'm saying. Let's just like kind of rein in terms of like the kind of expectations and like, he should be doing this at this level because he's a seed. And bro, again, he's just turned, I want to say 19. Like is he 19 or is he 20? I want to say he's still a teenager.
He's 19.
19 years old.
Like, he's about to turn 20 soon.
Plenty of time. Pesci Pericard, he is 20. But yeah, these are young guys. Like, just let them cook, please. Before we finish, I want to talk about so Gabriel Diallo, the Canadian. So this was his Grand Slam debut, and he lost a really tight three set. It was a five setter against Kei Nishikori, who I can't believe he's still playing. Kei Nishikori,
for real,
because he's literally the era of like Murray, Federer, Stanislas, Nadal, like, but yeah, he's still going. He did lose in the second round. He pulled out in the second round against, was it Shelton?
Yeah.
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 But yeah, good to see Diallo kind of put on a good showing like at a Grand Slam. And like, this was his debut. Mm-hmm. And then to finish, Christopher Eubanks, our guy, getting
such
Yannick,
a bad draw.
Yannick's in the first round. Like, oh man.
Like, man. it was really tough because I think, you know, coming into the tournament, everyone was talking about like Yannick Sinner, one hip, you know, the form and stuff. I was still like, that's still a bad draw. Like, you couldn't draw someone else, Chris Eubank. That was tough.
We tried to spin it like saying, oh, there's no better time to play Yannick Sinner. Like, but nah. But yeah, guys, that wraps up our French Open review of 2024. Like, what other girls we had?
Yeah.
The story of the tournament is Jasmine Paolini, though. Shouts out to Iga, of course. And obviously, we've got Zverev and Alcaraz playing in the finals we record. But for me, and I think for most people, Jasmine Paolini.
Paolini and Osaka.
And yeah, Osaka. Yeah.
Yeah. I was and like, you have to say Osaka.
But keep it, that's been global. We did have a champion as well. So let's shout out our girl, Coco Gauff, and Katerina Siniaková.
Yeah. We left with something. See, champions. We always leave with something. We always leave with something.
Always.
Doubles, or singles, juniors, wheelchair, it doesn't matter. We gonna leave with something. So shout out to all the players. How is everyone feeling about grass coming up now?
Oh man, it's gonna be intense. It's gonna be very, very intense. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And that literally starts like, well, tomorrow.
Basically. Nuts. Crazy.
I can't saw even get a little break. Practice video of Naomi Osaka on grass. Mm. And I was like, get me there now. Ready.
For real.
She's ready. In the Netherlands, go. Isn't she? Is it yeah. Hertog and Bosch?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, oh, yeah, that's
is it. Lieberman?
I think it's called the Lieberman Open. But yeah, I'm not actually okay. sure. Let's just actually check that. Facts check. Yes, it's Hertog and Bosch. That's the
okay.
town, I think. But yeah, yeah. It's the Lieberman Open.
Okay, perfect.
Which will be very exciting. Well, it's actually not called the Lieberman Open. Actually, it's called the... I'm never going to try to pronounce this, but Rose Manning Grass Court Championships. But yeah, it's a little bit more open.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry we've not been able to like kind of preview like what's going on the grass, but we can do that in another show. And Anastasia, we need to have you on again, definitely.
Yeah. This was fun. This was so much fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. This was a French Open that I didn't know what to expect going into it. And it delivered.
Yeah.
Like Naomi Osaka just, that's it. Naomi Osaka. French Open.
I mean to give you a shout out too, and most Americans as well, because the fact that you guys can kind of keep up with like things going on in Europe, like, man, I take my hat off to you guys getting up at 5 a.m. to watch Coco Gauff. Like, bloody hell. Insane.
I've started posting on social media where I do like the coffee emoji by tennis. That's just my life. It's like I wake up, I do the coffee, and I'm like, oh, they're playing. Let me wake up.
Insane. No, we really appreciate
you. You know what?
Us.
I do think the Australian Open was worse though. That was,
oh, really?
100%.
That was I just didn't even know what time I didn't know what day it was. I didn't know what time it was.
Yeah.
Because they're just a day ahead. And I was like, it's just,
oh, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
There was one time I did not sleep the entire day and I had work.
It bees like that sometimes, man. It bees like that sometimes.
This only to be stressed and shouting in front of your TV while you're watching the match.
And you're like, why am I doing this to myself?
Like
torture. Torture. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for tapping in. And yeah, we hope you've enjoyed the French Open as much as we have. And like Lucy said, look forward to kind of catching you up on the grass.
It's our time, baby.
On the grass court events.
It's our time. Welcome to the UK, boy.
Look out for more pods and obviously
time for crumpets and stuff.
And Anastasia, we'll definitely have you back on as well, because it'd be good to kind of get a bit more about your background as well, like, and all the stuff you've been doing with like Ground Pass and kind of future plans and stuff. So again, thanks for joining us.
Awesome, thank you for having me.
And yeah, guys, until next time, take care. Lucy, get some sleep.